First up on the High Velocity Radio Show, I am delighted to introduce a nationally recognized speaker. She's the president of SalesPeak, Inc. She's an expert in phone sales, consultative selling, and persuasive presentation skills. She's a two-time author, and she has just released a new book called The Naked Salesperson. Welcome to the show, Ms. Renee Walker.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit, Renee, about this new book of yours.
Well, all salespeople get the opportunity, if they're effective, to they're invited to go give a presentation to their clients. So our idea is that, you know, if the salesperson shows up with a bunch of PowerPoint slides, not only are they going to bore their customers to death, they're also not going to get the sale. Because no one wants to sit there and look at a bunch of slides in a dark room. So our idea is that actually the most effective salespeople are speaking naked. So they're speaking to that audience of customers. They're speaking about the customer's needs, and they're presenting in order to get a commitment.
And so do you find that salespeople too often just lean on crutches like PowerPoint and materials and brochures and that kind of thing?
Yeah, and that's the problem. Because most people, they know they have to give a presentation. And what they do is they sit at their computers and go, oh boy, now I get to use my PowerPoint. Oh, I'm going to slide this stuff in. I'm going to add some music and I'm going to do all this sexy, cool stuff. And everyone has seen this stuff. PowerPoint's been out for over 25 years. There isn't anything new. And the idea is when invited to give that presentation, the idea is to hook that group of customers, get them to buy in, and get the sale.
Well, the problem with PowerPoints is that the audience spends all their time reading those and not listening to what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when I see a presentation nowadays, if there's detailed PowerPoints, I'm not really interested in it.
You check out, don't you?
Yeah.
I was going to say, that's when the BlackBerry comes out, isn't it?
Well, yes.
And that's death, because if your BlackBerry is out, then you're obviously not listening.
What is your take, speaking of the audience being distracted by looking at their BlackBerry, what is your take on the audience being on Twitter and engaging their network and sharing and forwarding information they're learning during the presentation? What do you think of that?
Well, once again, you know, and I'm not the neuroscientist, but we keep hearing on NPR and in a variety of sources that the neuroscientists are saying we really are not effective at doing two things at once. So if somebody is doing their tweets while they're trying to listen, I really don't think that they're paying that much attention to the presentation. And anyone that says, well, I'll listen later or I'll pay attention later, they're not going to have the time.
But what the concept that I'm talking about is if the speaker makes a profound statement, mm-hmm. Something that the listener says, oh, that has meaning to me, and then they send out a tweet to their audience saying, hey, Renee Walkup just said, insert profound statement here, is there not, I think it's actually proof that they are listening, and then more importantly, they're sharing your profoundnessness with their audience.
Profoundnessness. I like that. Yeah, really, I'm flattered. My head is getting bigger here. Well, I know, for example, I did a presentation a couple of months ago to a group, an association, and apparently it went over well. It was on this naked salesperson topic of presenting, how to present, how to be more effective, how to do it in less time, for example. And I know that after the presentation, in fact, the next day, somebody tweeted it out to, I don't know, her network of thousands of people. She's involved in a variety of things. So I know she just did it, you know, that day. And it seemed like a better time to do it rather than during my presentation. So I liked that approach. What do you think about that?
I think it's, you know, I think it's cool for an audience to engage that way. Now, maybe I'm of a different generation, and that's how I've kind of been doing it for the last several years. But I think that's a way. I think that actually is proof that the audience is more engaged than if they were just listening and looking at PowerPoints.
How long has this book been out, and what compelled you to write it now?
Well, the book's been out for about 2 months, and what compelled me to write it now is that I've been doing training and presentations for almost 14 years, training thousands of people how to speak in public, and I've taken even the most reticent speakers, you know, a lot of technical people and scientists and even PhDs, to points where they can present effectively, you know, get over their anxiety, plan their presentations, and be effective in their presentations, and most importantly, handle those difficult questions that come up, and not only questions, but what I call the uglies, you know, the difficult kinds of conversations that can take place during a presentation. And most importantly is taking then that audience to the next step. So if it's a sales presentation for a product or a service, then getting that client group to it to commit, or it could be selling an idea. So maybe they're selling a new concept or an idea. We're all selling from the platform, and the key is that we don't have a lot of time to get somebody's attention.
Why do most salespeople struggle with these presentations?
Well, I think there are different reasons, Todd. I mean, I think one reason is, A, they depend on their PowerPoints, which I mentioned. I think another is that it's all about me. And so they keep talking about me, 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 and my company, and how long we've been around, and what we do, and the customers don't really care. And thirdly, I think that salespeople aren't really skilled at handling those difficult questions and group dynamics from the front of the room.
Yeah, this notion of me, me, me. I mean, that's just prevalent in so many facets of business. I don't quite get why someone's not, why their mentality isn't, hey, I want to serve and help people, and it's not just spouting platitudes about me. I just don't understand why are people that way? I just don't get it.
Well, I think sometimes the salespeople are told by the marketing departments, if I'm not stepping on any toes here, but stepping on sometimes.
We do that all the time around here. Don't worry about that.
Sometimes they're told, okay, well, here's your PowerPoint deck, and this is what you're going to present. And, you know, that's been discussed. So, secondly, I think sometimes that they just don't think that when a customer says, okay, you've got 45 minutes, they don't really have 45 minutes. When you show up to present, unless your name is Colin Powell or Bill Clinton, your time is going to be cut. So the reality is when a customer says you have 45 minutes, the salesperson really has about 30. And the salesperson, if they plan for 45 minutes, they're already in the hole in terms of their time and their persuasion. So they're not going to get to the end of the presentation, which the end of the persuasion is not Q&A. The end of the presentation in the naked formula is gaining a commitment, some kind of a commitment to the next step.
You say they have 30 minutes, but don't they only have a few minutes to make that connection at the very beginning of their presentation?
Well, yes, getting the connection, certainly, but they have to then keep the audience's attention. So what we talk about in the naked formula is that they're navigating the situation by planning, and they're approaching the sale with enthusiasm. They're keeping the buyer engaged, engaging with questions and managing those, and then driving the do to get the buy, and that's the five-step formula.
Oh, I like it. So NAKED is actually an acrostic, an acronym to help. It's like a mnemonic device to help people remember what to do.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I like it. Well, let's get a little free consulting here because Todd and I get a chance to present all the time, and I'm sure we could be a lot better at it. One of the questions that's always preys on my mind is how to open up a presentation in such a way that people at least, you know, give you a shot, you know, not shut you down right out of the box. Do you have some tips, techniques, some advice on how to open a presentation?
Sure. And I'm sure you guys don't do this, but the first thing you wouldn't want to do is, oh, good morning. My name is Renee Walkup, and I'm with SalesPeak.
No, I would say Renee
snooze.
Walker.
That's a big snooze. Anyway, so you want to open with something that gets the audience's attention. So if it's a customer, and we have a whole chapter on this in the book, you know, maybe it's a question, maybe it's a compelling statistic, maybe it's a quote, maybe it's a story. So it's something that says to the audience, okay, this isn't going to be the same kind of boring meeting presentation that you've been seeing over the last week. This is something different. It's something new, and this is going to require your attention. So it's a way to like grasp people and get them involved actually in the presentation immediately. But I'm sure you do that already.
Well, I'm sure Todd does, right?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I'm real good at that.
Well, I'm wondering about other contexts with an S. I don't know how you would pronounce that. And other venues. Here's what I'm trying to say. Do these same principles apply if I'm meeting with three or four senior execs in a large organization and I'm trying to sell them on an idea or a process or a strategy? And do some of these same principles apply if I'm putting together some written copy? Is there some application in those worlds as well?
When you say written copy, you're reading from the written copy?
No. But if I'm putting together a direct mail piece or a white paper or a something like that, do some of these same principles apply to that?
Yeah, some of them do in terms of, you know, benefits. But, you know, the idea is that, you know, really it's about persuasion. And so the better and most effective way you can persuade people is to get them on your team. And the way to do that is to speak to them. And, you know, we live in this technology world. You know, most of us are speaking in sound bites. We communicate often in sound bites and our writing, certainly as we're tweeting and as we're texting and often in email. But the reality is that my philosophy is the best communicators win. So the more effective you are, at communicating your thoughts and ideas and getting people to buy in, then the more successful you're going to be.
Well, that makes perfect sense. But it's the notion of what we talked about earlier about promoting me. If you want someone to buy into your idea, you almost want to communicate it in such a way that they feel like they're contributing to the development of that idea or that concept.
Absolutely, which is the engaging part of the naked process. So the engagement is keeping that group of decision makers involved in the presentation. So it's not just a talking head.
I think these two have put a lot of thought into the orchestrating the whole process. You got this political consultant on one end of the table, and this lady that's been in the industry for so many years. I think they've got a pretty good handle on orchestrating the whole process.
Oh no, orchestrating is a dirty word in my line of work. But hey, Renee, tell us a little bit about your business. You're the president of SalesPeak. Tell us a little bit about that entity.
Okay, well, SalesPeak. I founded SalesPeak in '96, which makes me 1,000 years old, and I founded it thinking that companies needed something different. They need tactics in their sales. So really what we do is we focus in two different areas. One is phone sales, and I have a – can I put a plug in for another book here?
Oh, absolutely. I was going to ask you about that book.
Thanks. Selling to Anyone Over the Phone, which is a bestseller. It's done really, really well. We have it in audio as well as it's published. And selling to anyone over the phone, if you think about it, all sales start with the telephone, some kind of an engagement, whether it's prospecting, voicemail, something in the phone. And so we do the beginning of the sale tactically, phone, and then we also do, if you think about it, the end of the sale, which is presentation skills, which is this new book, The Naked Salesperson. So how we're different from other sales consulting companies is that we're really tactical. We get down into how do you say it, what words do you use, how do you use your voice, how do you engage that customer, how do you leave a message, how do you use email in order to follow up. Everything is tactical that we do. So a lot of companies that we work with are actually Fortune 1000 companies. In fact, most of them are, and they have their own training departments, but they use us to fill the gaps. And we like that. That works well.
Interesting that you mentioned that you provide the words. Are you familiar with Tony Hsieh, the CEO of Zappos?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He has this new book out now that's a bestseller. It's called Delivering Happiness. And of course, they're renowned for their customer service. And they pride themselves on not giving their customer service people a script. I'm just curious if sometimes a script can be bounding and hold you back and not let you be as free to kind of take the conversation where maybe it needs to go. What's your thought on that?
Mm-hmm. Well, you use the word script, and I think that's a dirty word. I don't just like you have your dirty words, Todd. I don't feel that scripts are a good idea, but I feel like planning and I feel like prompting words are a great idea.
Okay.
So it's part of the planning process. So I don't like people reading off scripts. I think that that's dull and boring, it goes back to Zappos's CEO, which is the reality is it's about engaging that customer. And I happen to be one of their customers, by the way. So,
well, you're a woman, so I figured
and they do have great service. And anyway, so the idea really is to have knowledge, and it does require training. It does require thinking, because sometimes what we think is not what we should say. We've known that since we were very small.
Right, and Stone never actually
I get told that all the time.
Right.
It's that old think before you say, right?
Right.
Before you speak.
Well, Renee, you've been on just a ton of radio shows and television programs. You obviously either have a marvelous PR person or you're doing a terrific PR. What advice, if any, do you have for our listeners who are seeking to step up their own public relations effort and get out there? What can you tell us about how and why you've succeeded in that?
Well, one, I'd say learn how to speak if that's not your strong suit. So, pay attention to your surroundings. I don't know that I'm in the PR business exactly, but, think about who you're meeting and how you're meeting people and what impression are you making and what you wear and how you shake hands. And, it goes back to the basics, Stone. It really does. Like when you and I met 50,000 years ago. Of course, you were young then.
So what are some major mistakes that people, you talked about the book on selling over the phone. What are some major mistakes that people make in selling over the phone in your experience?
Well, the first one is they talk too much. you know, salespeople leave these voicemail messages that are just interminable. And then they think, oh, that customer or that prospect's going to call me back. Wrong. You know, the idea is leave a 13-second message that's very quick. It's really three lines. It doesn't mean talking faster. It means talking clearer and having a plan in place. So, Todd, you mentioned scripting earlier. Sometimes I do recommend scripting that voicemail message because a lot of people tend to ramble when they hear that silence on the other end. So one idea is 13-second messages. Another one, Stone, is to watch your posture. Your posture affects the way your voice comes across. You know that you're in radio. So are your feet flat on the floor? Are is your chest up? Is your head up? Or are you checking your email? Are you doing something else while you're on the phone? It affects your voice. And you can and the customer can tell on the other end. And
pay less no likely attention to the man behind the curtain putting his feet on the floor now.
Yes.
Feet flat, yes. That's to do with the neurons going back to the brain and stimulation and blood flow. A lot of the things you know from sports actually.
Stone's got no neurons firing in his brain, so that's not really a problem for him.
So what was your favorite part about putting this book together and writing it in general? What do you really like about the process of putting a book together and getting it out to the market, and what, if anything, do you find a little bit frustrating?
Which book, Stone? Either one? I mean, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm
book?
Just asking in general. I'm always intrigued by someone who has successfully taken all those ideas that are rattling around in their head and committed them to paper and then convinced other people to pay money for them. I think that's terrific. So I'm interested, and I think our listeners are often interested in any insight they can get on the book writing process, the selling process.
Well, I used to be in the publishing business, but I wasn't in trade. But one thing about writing books is it's a lot of work, and the work really begins after the book is written. So after all that work, then there's all the marketing work, which you know. And so that's one. I think also it's really important. You know, Amazon is critical. Whether people are purchasing their books from Amazon or not, Amazon is certainly the key to reviews. Everybody goes to Amazon to see, do they like this book? What did they think of this book? What do the people say? So I think that's really important that you have some good reviews on Amazon, which helps sell the book. And I think people are looking for solutions. They're not looking for a lot of text. So they want to know, how do I do this? Not theory. No one has time to sit around and think about theory anymore. So they want to know, how do I do this? What do I say? Where do I go? And I think that the books that are most pedantic in that way are the most successful.
We'll look up pedantic in a little while.
Yeah, I don't know what it means either. But it sounds
cool. Descriptive.
Sounded great.
Descriptive.
No, I think it sounded terrific. Well, listen, how can our listeners get in touch with you, find out more about your work, hire you to speak, buy your books, all that kind of cool stuff?
I love that question. So thank you. Yeah. Anyway, they can go to our website. And by the way, I write an article every week called Quick Sales Tips, which is free. And anyone can subscribe to that by going to our website, which is SalesPeak, S-A-L-E-S. P, like in Paul, E-A-K, salespeak.com. And those articles are also archived. So if you're in sales and you need more information, you can certainly pick up anything off that website that you would like that will help you. The books are sold on the website as well. And that's the best way to get in touch with the website. And then you can contact me if you have any questions. I'm happy to help. I love to sell and I love to see people successful. And my email address is walkup, W-A-L-K-U-P. At salespeak.com.
Well, before we let you go, we have a little tradition here on the High Velocity Radio Show where we like to ask each guest, if they would, to share a mistake that they've made at some point in their career, and really, more importantly, what they feel like they learned from it. Could we get you to do that for us?
Sure. As far as career mistakes, I don't see that I've had career mistakes. I mean, certainly there are things that maybe I would have done differently, but all of those things have helped shape my career. I think the worst mistake I ever made was getting into selling word processing machines back in 1982. And we had these things that weighed about, collectively, it was about 100-pound machine that was a word processor. I didn't enjoy that business very much, but I still learned.
Well, I'm sorry if we dug up any old scars. Well, it has been an absolute delight having you on the show, and I hope you'll come back and visit with us again sometime.
I'd love to come back. Thank you.
You're more than welcome. Thanks for coming.